Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready?
Hell yeah! Yeah, right!
Big Tuesday in Oxford, Mississippi. The red-hot Ole Miss baseball team back in action this evening at Swayze Field, hosting Southeast Missouri. The Rebels have won five in a row. They're off to a 10-1 start, and a couple of quality wins mixed in those 10 victories over what was a number two ranked Louisville team when Ole Miss beat them, as well as number 19 Coastal Carolina over the weekend. So Ole Miss baseball certainly off to a great start. The SEC tournament getting underway this week from Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, Tennessee. Of course, Ole Miss set to play Alabama Thursday night. The Rebels a number 7 seed going into the tournament. And the theme is still the same for Ole Miss. They're going to have to make major waves in Nashville. Waves such as winning the entire tournament if they're going to punch a ticket to the big dance, the NCAA tournament. They still need a good showing to ensure themselves an NIT berth, even if they fall short of winning the SEC tournament, Dave, because now what you're looking at with the NIT, and we've talked about this before, is it's run by the NCAA, and there are guarantees made with mid-major conferences that if they win their regular season championship but fail to win their conference tournament championship, which is the only way they're getting in the dance, then they get automatic qualifying bids for the NIT, which means there are fewer at-large spots for the 32-team NIT field. So Andy Kennedy and his Ole Miss bunch, sure, their eyes are on the big prize of winning the entire SEC tournament. And there is some parity in the SEC this year, so a hot team could perhaps pull something out in Nashville. But more importantly, or equally importantly, is you're still trying to up your position in the judgment of those who select the NIT at-large teams as well. Tennessee, they knocked off Tennessee Saturday in Knoxville. Dave, that was big. It was the 20th win of the season. They needed to get to that magic number, I think, as far as the NIT is concerned. Help their seeding a little bit, and we'll see what happens Thursday night at Bridgestone Arena, Dave.
Yeah, as you mentioned, David, Ole Miss, it still sits where it was last week. They're going to need to make a significant run in the SEC tournament, win the whole thing, in my opinion, to really show that they deserve to be in the NCAA tournament, and they got to get some quality wins in there. If they beat Alabama in the second round, then they will move on to the quarterfinals against a tough component, number 2 seed Kentucky. What Ole Miss has done, as you mentioned, they've got some road wins recently. One at Auburn that comes to mind, and then one at just this past weekend at Tennessee. So they're going to be playing on a neutral court with everybody in the field of the SEC. So it's their opportunity. But as you mentioned, there's not enough bids in there for the NIT. So I can see it as a concern of postseason hopefuls, because players like Stephon Moody and the seniors that will be playing their final games in their Rebel careers coming up, you do want them to see some postseason action, even if that is to return back to Oxford at home and possibly host some NIT games.
Stephon Mooney, the lone Ole Miss Rebel selected to the coaches' SEC all-conference team, which was released on Tuesday morning, this morning. Mooney named first team all-SEC, and he's the only Rebel that scratched their way onto that honor roll. Getting back to Thursday night's game between Ole Miss and Alabama, the Rebels 20-11 overall, Alabama 17-13. Dave, I mean, this could very well be, and regardless of what happens after this game, this could very well be an NIT play-in game where the winner will advance and the loser might not make the NIT field. What are your thoughts on that?
It's very possibility. Alabama, at one point in the season, was one of those teams that were sitting on the bubble, and you know, they've lost some few down the stretch that hurt their RPI, their resume. So, in my opinion, it's a must win for both teams. I would think, you know, with the regular season showing of Ole Miss beating Alabama in a pretty dominant fashion, as I remember in the regular season, Ole Miss has to have some sort of momentum heading into this game. But don't count Alabama out of not just folding on this one. They're going to come into this game with the fight. And just to throw one thing, as you mentioned, David, Stephon Mooney, you know, winning the Howell Trophy, it surprised me that you know, he did not win the SEC Player of the Week at any point this year. I was thinking even that 43-point win where he shot that career-high 43 points against Mississippi State, I was expecting to see an SEC Player of the Week award out of that, and just did not come to him at any point in the season. And you would have thought at some week the SEC's leading scorer would get that accolade.
Well, I wasn't surprised he did not win SEC Player of the Week for this past week, simply because, and I agree with you, the 43-point effort against Mississippi State, it looked like he would have been in the driver's seat, but he followed that up with 12 points in Knoxville. And, you know, had he scored his customary 20-plus against the Volunteers on Saturday, then I could see where Stephon Mooney would have probably been named the SEC Player of the Week for the final week of the regular season. But honestly, I mean, there are some things bigger than that. And, you know, he got into a little foul trouble early, but the fact of the matter was Ole Miss didn't need him. It was Syed doing the damage on the inside, and ended up being a huge road victory for Ole Miss, one they kind of just walked away with against Tennessee, who was without their leading scorer and punter, who did not play, and that certainly tipped the scales to Ole Miss's advantage. You know, so here we are, 20-11, heading into the SEC tournament. We've seen Andy Kennedy-coached teams make unexpected noise in the SEC postseason before, and you certainly cannot rule that possibility out this season, particularly if one Mr. Mooney catches fire in Nashville. Ole Miss could be a dangerous opponent, and an opponent that a lot of folks won't want to see. The tough thing for the Rebels is that they're on the same side of that SEC bracket as Kentucky and South Carolina, so one of those, even if you do win on Thursday night, is going to be waiting for you. You're going to have to run through one or the other to get all the way to Sunday's championship game. But that's why we love it. That's why we're fans. It'll be fun to see what happens. If they win Thursday night, they live to fight another day. And we'll see what the end result is. Selection Sunday right around the corner. And then, of course, the NIT field will be announced shortly after the NCAA field. And you know, some people, you know, really believe, you know, taking that NIT bid birth would you know, is disappointing. I don't see it that way. You know, I think it would be awesome for the Pavilion to host an NIT game, and the excitement around this team as they would enter that tournament and try to make some waves. They've gone to the Final Four in the NIT a couple of times under Andy Kennedy, and this is a team that could certainly do that as well. But we're putting the horse before the cart before the horse here, so to speak, because there's still a fighting chance that with a fantastic showing in Nashville, these Rebels could get to the big dance. It's not probable, but certainly possible, and we'll just see how it all plays out. Baseball at Swayze tonight, Davis, Dollar Hot Dog Night. It might be worth your drive just to come over here for the Dollar Hot Dogs. That's always a big fan draw. Southeast Missouri, the Red Hawks are in town for two games this week. They'll play game one tonight at 6:30, game two set for 4 o'clock Wednesday afternoon at Swayze. As we mentioned, the Ankos Rebels are off to about as good of a start as you could hope for. You know, when you take two out of three from a team ranked number two in the nation, then you go on the road to a round-robin tournament to another top 25 team, beat them, and really just maul the other two opponents there. You got to like what you're seeing right now. 22 runs scored over the weekend for the Rebels against the likes of Ball State, Coastal Carolina, and Cincinnati. They only gave up 6 runs, and more importantly, the bullpen. 10 innings worked at the Coastal Carolina round robin. 0 runs allowed over the course of the 3 days. The Ole Miss bullpen's earned run average sets at 1.58 right now, and you've got to love that. But tonight they'll put that 10-1 record on the line against Southeast Missouri. A beautiful day in Oxford, should be a beautiful evening as well. So if you're close by, I would encourage you to get to the ballpark. Ole Miss will send the 6'7" freshman righty James MacArthur to the mound tonight. He's 0-0 on the year. He's worked 6.1 innings so far, and he's been their starter in the two previous midweek games they've played this season. No decisions in both of those. Southeast Missouri's going to throw Jacob Lawrence. Dave, this Ole Miss baseball team, you kind of got a sense that the Rebels felt like being ignored a little bit in the preseason by all the prognosticators who picked them, you know, 5th, 6th in the SEC West, and they didn't really say anything, but you get the sense they had a chip on their shoulder, and they've jumped out of the gates here with this 2016 season, looking like a team that is, A, commanding some respect, and B, wanting to show everybody that they didn't get their just due in the preseason. Now, it's early in the season. It's a long ways to go. But right now, this team, a consensus number 13 national ranking by all the major polls this week, and a lot of baseball left to play. But right now, Dave, so far, so good.
You're correct. And one thing that I've learned over the years with Mike Bianco as their coach, who consistently sends this team to the postseason. You can't deny him the fact when he says that he feels really good about this team heading into the season. You should feel really good about this team heading into the season. Last year, was an expecting rebuilding year for Ole Miss, and a lot of those guys who had that first year experience, who were young freshmen or junior college transfers, those guys are starting to show, starting to stand out this season. And one thing that I've noticed after the first couple weeks is the bats have starting to really heat up for Ole Miss and to go on the road and into a neutral tournament and sweep the competition that is very impressive. Michael Quirk has joined us on the show. Michael, what are your thoughts on Ole Miss's hot start to the season?
Well, we knew coming in how much they had returning in the order with Colby Bortles and J.B. Woodman, and, of course, preseason All-American Errol Robinson and guys like that. But what's really been impressive is how this bullpen's come along. You had a senior in Matt Denny who struggled last year but is one of the team captains. You, of course, have lockdown, closer, wide, short. And then you had Will Stokes. And then after that, there was some Ole Miss fans that, you know, sort of felt some trepidation going forward, looking at those bullpen arms. And the bullpen's been fantastic. Coach Bianco, he told me before the season, this may be the deepest and best bullpen I've had. And, you know, you sort of wonder if that's coach speak, if that's, you know, sort of optimism during the preseason. But it's really come to fruition to look that way. You see Dallas Wolfolk, who's a true freshman, who's throwing mid-90s and is absolutely blowing teams away. He has yet to allow an earned run. He's allowed one run on the year. That was on a balk in Myrtle Beach over the weekend, and even had a three-inning save over the weekend in Myrtle Beach. And he's been spectacular. And you see other guys like Andy Pagnozzi, another true freshman at Fayetteville, Arkansas, who's been really dominant, coming in 2, 3, 4 innings at a time and has really given the Rebels some versatility in the staff, allowing them to pull a pitcher after 5. Or if he's struggling going into the fourth, you can take him out because you have that long reliever who throws up a lot of zeros. And, of course, you throw into that mix junior college lefty and David Parkinson, who has some of the filthiest stuff on the staff, and he's pitched really well. And you really have to tip your cap to the starting rotation, who all three, Smith, Johnson, and Bramlett, all had injuries that they were getting over in the offseason. Bone spurs in the elbow for Bramlett, Tommy John for Johnson, as well as a torn oblique for Smith. And Smith's been outstanding ever since he struggled in that first start. You sort of understood that it may be the yips, and he's been incredible in his last two starts, even in the loss against Louisville. He was very, very sharp. And Sean Johnson, he's gone into some first-inning trouble this year and then just throws up zeros after that. He allowed 2 runs against FIU, 2 runs against Louisville, allowed runners on the corners against Cincinnati, and then after that he settles in, pitches very well, gives his team a chance to win, and you have Mr. Consistency in Brady Bramlett, who will go up against anyone. He's a bulldog when he's on the mound and absolutely a team leader on the team. And you've seen this team really come together, play some good baseball, and there are some young parts. There's only going to be time for guys like a Pagnozzi, a Wolfolk, Ryan Olenek, who may have solidified himself as a designated hitter. 3 guys have been used in that spot this year, but he had a strong weekend and could very well lock himself into that DH position going forward. But there are so many young guys that are going to get better as the year goes on, and it's certainly a really exciting team. The fact that they're 10-1 right now with 3 wins over opponents who are ranked at the time of the game. Of course, Coastal's dropped out, but it's certainly an exciting time for this team, and they've proven that they're as well-rounded as it gets right now.
Michael, baseball is a stat game. We talk about things such as earned run average and batting average and on-base percentage and things of that, but removing the numbers out of the equation and looking at this Ole Miss baseball team, what about the fact that this is a team, and this is the intangible aspect, the thing that kind of makes you start to feel good about this group? This is a team that trailed Louisville and came back and won. This is a team that had to have a walk-off hit to defeat Arkansas State in a midweek game, but they found a way to get it. This is a team that trailed Memphis 6-0 in a midweek game and stormed back to get the victory. What about the chemistry? What about the intangible aspects of Mike Bianco's 2016 edition?
This is a team that all of Rebel Nation is going to love because they're a team that's immensely talented, but they feel disrespected. They felt disrespected by being picked 5th in the SEC West. They feel disrespected by being left out of every poll but one, and I believe they were 23rd in that one. And they just really have a chip on their shoulder. And it's been something that's been talked about in the preseason. Even during the season, guys have been talking about that they don't feel like they're getting any respect out there. And also, you look at what happened out in the regional last year, going 0-2 against a Big Ten team and Cal State University Bakersfield. This is a scrappy bunch that wants to prove everyone wrong and has one single goal on their minds, and that's to win the national championship. They're not saying that they want to. They're not talking in, you know, the typical player speak of, well, yeah, we want to take this one game at a time. We want to get in good position for Hoover. No, that's not this team. They're not talking about, hey, we just want to win the SEC. That's not what they're talking about. They're not even talking about, let's get to Omaha. You talk to any guy on the team, they're saying, we're going to Omaha, and we're winning it this year. That's their goal. And, I mean, they really do feel like they've gotten disrespected. And Coach Bianco said, and this is something that really stood out to me, is after that Sunday series-clinching win over Louisville, where they came back from down 2-0, and then the bullpen was fantastic. Sean Johnson was fantastic the rest of the game. And Coach Bianco said, this game was important to this team. They wanted to go out there and win this one because on Friday they felt like that game was sort of handed to them. Because if you'll think back, Kyle Funkhauser, I believe he walked 7 in that game. And while it takes patience at the plate to you know, put yourself in the position to walk and to score those runs that have walked, they feel like they didn't earn that game. They beat the number 2 team in the country, and they didn't feel like that was their best baseball or that was the best game that they've played. And so they went out there with a point to prove that they didn't want to be given the game or have anyone think they were given the game. They wanted to go out there and take it. And Sean Johnson has said time after time that he loves his team. He loves his team because when someone struggles, there's someone else to pick them up. Whether it's a bad play in the field, there's someone there to get a big hit the next half inning. If the pitcher's struggling, the bats come alive. There's always someone to rebound after an errant shot. And that's something that you have to love about this team is that really attitude of us against the world, and they're really putting it into action so far this year.
All right, Ole Miss baseball at Swayze tonight and tomorrow afternoon against Southeast Missouri State. The Rebels ranked 13th in the nation consensusly this week. All the polls aligned as far as Ole Miss goes. And a couple of, you know, when you look at these midweek games, Ole Miss obviously with a chance to take both of them from SEMO, and then a 3-game series against Grambling State this weekend in Oxford. And all of a sudden, if you win those 5, you're on a 10-game win streak, and you're 15-1 overall, and then you're probably breaking into the top 10. And SEMO, Grambling, neither one of those baseball powers by any stretch of the imagination, all games winnable for this Ole Miss team. It is baseball, and sometimes that thing takes a funny bounce, but we'll see as things get first pitch set for, I believe, 6:30 p.m. this afternoon at Swayze Field. All right, let's switch gears and talk about football right now, and we'll enter the drama dome, so to speak. There's always some off-the-field story that's surrounding football programs, no matter what university you're talking about. Ole Miss, no different. Hugh Freeze speaks on Breland Speaks yesterday during practice, spring practice underway at Ole Miss, and Freeze addresses the situation with his starting defensive tackle, who was arrested for suspicion of DUI in the wee hours of Friday morning. Breland Speaks on the practice field yesterday. Didn't see anything out of the ordinary as far as Speaks was concerned. Freeze says he's ready to go as normal. There are consequences. Freeze has already met with him, laid down the law, so to speak, as to what he's going to have to do to get back in the good graces of the coaching staff after making that off-the-field mistake. Freeze kind of left the door cracked open. He did leave it cracked open as to whether or not the disciplinary action he's taking against Breland Speaks will carry over into the Rebels September the 5th season opener at against Florida State in Orlando. There are two paths for Speaks to follow. One, has him eligible to play against the Seminoles in the Rebels' opening game. The other does not. And Freeze says it's squarely in the hands of Breland Speaks on how he handles this and what he does as to whether or not he will be suspended for that first game. What is the punishment for Speaks? Freeze did not elaborate. And I'll quote him here because I think it was pretty interesting what he said. And I quote, "When I discipline my 3 girls, I don't tell everybody what that is. I try to keep it that way because they're like my kids, talking about the Ole Miss players. He says, you don't quit loving your kids when they make a poor choice or a bad decision, but there are consequences. He'll handle them. He knows it was a mistake, and he's well aware of it. So that's all Hugh Freeze would say regarding Breland Speaks. Not missing any practice time. He has a pathway to make sure that he does play in that season opening game against Florida State for the Rebels. And we'll see. I guess if he's on the field, Dave, on the night of September the 5th, he's handled his business properly. If he's not, then we know what happened.
You're correct, David, and Breland, unfortunately he made a mistake, I've talked to Breland in the past, and how he presents himself, it just from my opinion, I see it as, he sees that he made a mistake, and he's going to put that team mindset in his mind and just improve from this and do what he needs to do to correct his actions and move forward with this and focus in on what needs to be done, and that's to help out his team. And he's highly talented, and in a lot of opinions he is the heir to Robert Kimdichie, the potential replacement for Robert Kimdichie in that front interior line of the defense. And yesterday at practice we saw him in position with those ones. We saw a little bit of Benito Jones, Ross Donnelly in those ones. I'm really impressed so far what I've seen with the defensive line. A lot of talent replacing a few starters from last season. So and they're going to find that depth, hopefully heading into the fall.
And perhaps the most talented of all those defensive linemen was not on the field yesterday. DJ Jones on the sidelines. He was in his jersey and a pair of shorts. Had a compression wrap on his left knee. Was not divulged exactly what injury it is, but Freeze was asked about injuries, and he told us nothing significant with anyone at this point that we don't already know about. So DJ Jones, probably a pull, a strain, or something of that nature, and will likely be back out there. The Rebels will practice again tomorrow. Originally scheduled to practice this Friday and open to the media, but I'm getting some unofficial word that there will be no practice Friday, that they're probably going to practice Thursday instead of Friday and let the guys go early for spring break. We'll let you know as soon as we get some official word on that. But we're expecting that Thursday practice, if that is indeed what we're looking at, to be open. Practice was open yesterday. They mixed it up out there pretty good. Some contact going on. A lot of good battles up front between the offensive and defensive line. Shea Patterson taking a few reps with the ones. Jason Pellerin, the same thing, looking good. Chet Kelly didn't practice Saturday. I understand it was a slight groin pull, but I didn't see any signs of Kelly favoring anything yesterday. He looked his normal dynamic self on the practice field. Never saw him limp, never saw him gimpy, so he looked really good. Just didn't practice Saturday, most likely, as a precaution. Some of the guys out this spring, Herbert Moore, Robert Conyers, Fidel Brown, DeMore Stringfellow, saw them inside the weight room yesterday working out during practice. DeMarcus Gates didn't practice. He had a walking boot on the sidelines. But again, Freeze was asked. He didn't get specific, but he said no serious injuries whatsoever so far this spring. It was good to see Willie Hibbler back on the field yesterday, as well as Eric Swinney, both those guys making their practice debuts. Hibbler with the linebackers right now, and man, he looked good. He runs well. Big old guy. We'll see if the light comes on for Willie anytime soon. Eric Quinney looked good running the football in his first action of the spring. Of course, he's recovering from a stress fracture that was diagnosed right before fall camp last year. As far as position battles, it's a little early right now in the spring to kind of pinpoint exactly where things are heating up at. A lot of competition in the secondary, particularly at the safety position. Ole Miss fans are waiting on C.J. Hampton for his potential to finally arrive, and Corey Bettine saying after practice yesterday that Hampton's certainly going to be given every opportunity to shine this spring. So far, so good. I think C.J.'s having a really good spring as things move on. But the Rebels will break at the end of this week for spring break. So they'll be out of town for about 10 days and come back and wrap things up with 9 practices. Again, no Grove Bowl this year. And right now, no word on any public viewing of this football team this spring. If that changes, we'll certainly tell you. But as of right now, we know of no scheduled public viewing for this football team this spring. But keep it tuned to Rebels 247. We'll keep you updated on everything involving Ole Miss spring football. So, Dave, you got to lay your eyes on Ole Miss yesterday. What did you think about the pace the offense was moving during the team session? I think for it to just be the fourth practice of the year, man, they're moving fast out there.
You're right, David, and you're seeing it move in fast in both the first string and the second string. Of course, Shea Patterson and Jason Pellerin, they're rotating out that second string, and there's a lot of impact players. We were expecting, Ole Miss to definitely not take a dip in the wide receiver groups, and there's a lot of young talent out there that's showing a lot of promise. One that just stood out to me yesterday was Van Jefferson. He is playing that slot receiver position, and he made a lot of amazing catches yesterday in scrimmages, and he shows a lot of promise. And he was practicing with the ones yesterday. So you mentioned it, and it is too early to pinpoint any kind of position battles this early in the spring. But Van Jefferson, there, it really stood out to me yesterday that he was practicing in the ones yesterday in that slot receiver position, where Markell Pack was in with the twos in that slot receiver position. Quincy Adebojo making a lot of good plays yesterday, and then even DeMarcus Lodge also having a lot of great catches. But it is really impressive to see that offense just moving down the field really fast with both Kelly in the first string, and then Pellerin and Shea Patterson when they're on the field as well. That offense is moving down pretty quickly.
Let's have a little fun here. Now, there's a lot of ground to chew between now and the start of the 2016 season, but let's kind of rub our crystal ball, so to speak. Where do you guys, and just a quick answer here, where do you guys think the Rebels line up in the preseason polls? Michael, where do you see this football team being ranked preseason?
I think a lot in the national media have sort of pegged Ole Miss as being in a rebuilding year by losing Kimdichie Treadwell and Laramie Tunsil. But I think with the senior quarterback coming back, and they saw that there is another infusion of talent coming in, I think they'll get a little bit more respect. I think they'll end up in about that probably 13-14 range.
How about you, Dave?
I'm going to agree with Michael. I mean, he made a good point. I think the national view of it in the polls, you're going to think, that losing those underclassmen of the 2013 class with Treadwell, Kimdichie, and Tunsil being gone is going to be a form of a rebuilding year. But they are going to gain some respect in there. I see a top 15. I'll just pinpoint it down, maybe 13. Somewhere right in there, really close to the top 10, but not cracking inside that top 10, and that they will have that form of respect.
Yeah, and I think I'll make it a consensus. I see them right around the 13 mark, certainly a top 15 team, with the opportunity to jettison up the polls in the month of September if they were to defeat Florida State and to beat Alabama for the third consecutive year and to be able to beat Georgia at home in the month of September. If you fast forward, if you want the perfect storm, the perfect scenario, if this Ole Miss team is 4-0 at the end of September, it's definitely in the top five, if not ranked number one. if because that would mean they would have knocked off a Florida State team that's going to be a top 10 preseason team. It would mean they would have beaten Alabama for the third straight year, who could be ranked number one when you play them, and beat a Georgia team that's going to be pretty good. Now, no disrespect to Wofford, but Ole Miss certainly expected to handle them on the second week of the season. All right, now, if all of that happens, guys, if somehow or another Ole Miss is 4-0 and arguably have gotten to Florida State and Alabama, and arguably three, and Georgia, of their toughest games on their schedule out of the way, you would think Chad Kelly is off to a roaring start. And you would think that a 4-0 Ole Miss team at the end of September would likely have the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman Trophy on its roster in Chad Kelly. Now, I know this is pipe dreaming a little bit here, but we're just having a little fun with this. But a 4-0 Ole Miss team that has knocked off Florida State, Alabama, and Georgia all in the month of September, guys, they could very well be ranked number one in the country, and they could very well have the Heisman Trophy favorite on their roster. Michael, what's poke holes in that? What's wrong with that scenario?
I really can't think of anything, because Florida State, returning Dalvin Cook, and despite losing Jalen Ramsey, they have a lot come back on defense, in addition to all the skill players they return on offense. And that Florida State offense is going to be potent going into next year. So I think they'll probably be a top three, top five team going into the year. Knocking them off on a neutral field, which, while it's neutral, I mean, anyone with eyes can tell that's not going to be a neutral site game. Orlando's just a couple hours away from Tallahassee. That's right in the Florida State alumni hotbed. So knocking off them, the defending national champion Alabama Crimson Tide, who they will be, of course, a top five team, and then also beating Georgia, who's coming off of a 10-1 year in which they didn't have Heisman hopeful Nick Chubb for much of the year. If they're able to knock off Georgia as well, which will, in my opinion, they'll be a top 25 team. They're able to beat two top five teams and top 25 team in the first month. Then the way you saw Mississippi State rise in the polls, number one, I think you really have to think that Ole Miss will rise, because they're not just beating three ranked teams, three highly ranked teams. They will have beaten three highly ranked teams that are traditional powerhouses. They're not beating, you know, a Boise State who's up in the polls. You're not beating an Iowa who's up in the polls. Florida State, that's big time football. Alabama, maybe the most respected football program in college football history, and Georgia's right up there as well. Beating those three will vault up to number one. And if they do go 4-0, it's not because Chad Kelly was average. Chad Kelly was great in those four games if they're able to go 4-0. And he's not, you know, a flash in the pan, an early season guy. He did it last year. He had a spectacular season last year. He's going to get a lot of hype going into the preseason. He carries that into just a torrid start in September 2016. Then I think, you know, you'll see the highs and buzz just abound for Kelly. He'll certainly be among the front runners, if not alone at the top, with of course guys like Leonard Fournette and Dalvin Cook and Nick Chubb floating around nearby, JT Barrett floating around nearby. But I certainly think if Ole Miss is able to go 4-0, they will be number one in the country, and of course they will have the Heisman front runner there.
And now that we've gotten you all excited, Let's look at this. I would say arguably the toughest September schedule in the history of Ole Miss football. Florida State, Alabama, Georgia. Three of your first four games right there. Now, that's the scenario if things go as good as they can possibly go. On the flip side of that, there's the reality that this Ole Miss football team that has taken up residence as a perennial top 15 program, finished in the top 10 in the nation this past year, Sugar Bowl champions, two seasons in a row qualifying for New Year's Six bowl games, two seasons in a row in the college football playoff talk at one point of the season. There is the stark reality, this is a brutal game, folks, that this Ole Miss football team could look up at the end of September and be 1-3. That is the flip side of this schedule, let's call it a schedule of opportunity in September for the Rebels. But it's something that could go that way. This could be a very, very good football team, and it could be 1-3 after a month. And that's when things will get interesting with the fans in terms of, how loud will they be screaming. But this is a team that could be 1-3 at the end of September and end up the year 10-3, and back in a New Year's Six bowl game, or 9-3 and back in a New Year's Six bowl game. That's just kind of what you're looking at this year. You're going to know a whole lot about Ole Miss by the time October rolls around on the calendar. And Dave, I mean, I see that too as a reality. I certainly see the possibility of a 4-0 start, of an ascension up the polls, of Chad Kelly becoming even more of a household name as a Heisman Trophy candidate. But you can't discount the other way as well. You lose a tough one at a neutral site to Florida State. You don't beat Alabama for the third year in a row. And I would say Ole Miss is the underdog going into the Florida State game. And I'm going to tell you, just because the odds of no one beats Alabama 3 years in a row, they're probably going to be a dog at home against the Crimson Tide on week three of the season. And then if they're 1-2 in Georgia, and let me tell you something, Kirby Smart is going to have Georgia balling. He's the right guy for that job. The talent is already there, and Smart will have Georgia. Georgia's going to win the SEC East this year. I'm going to go on record as saying that on Tuesday, March 8th. Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs win the SEC East. They're going to be hot when they come to Oxford. So, and not an easy opponent. So the 1-3 is a possibility too, Dave. I mean, what would you say to that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, David. I agree with you. I could see a 4-0 start or a 1-3 start. And you said Florida State, Ole Miss could definitely head into that game as an underdog, and rightfully so, and as well as Alabama. I mean, Nick Saban has not lost to a team three consecutive years, and I think you're going to hear a lot of that, in the national perspective heading into that matchup, because I, heard a lot of it that, last year Nick Saban, as Ole Miss was heading into Tuscaloosa, what you heard was Nick Saban was 9-1 heading into that game in revenge game. So I really can't see Ole Miss heading in against Alabama, even with a 2-0 record, as the primary favorite heading into that game. But
I disagree with you on that point. I think if Ole Miss goes to Orlando and knocks off Florida State and does to Wofford what they should do to Wofford, I think the money would be on Ole Miss to beat Alabama with that game in Oxford, but a loss to Florida State, and there's no way Ole Miss is favored at home against Alabama. I just don't see that. Mm-hmm. But a 2-0 Ole Miss team who's got to win basically on the road against the Florida State team, as Michael said, will likely be a top five preseason team. I think Ole Miss would be favored in that contest, not by much. Whether you're favored or you're the dog in that game, the point spread's not going to be very big. I don't foresee, but man, what some fantastic things to look forward to this fall if you are an Ole Miss fan. The excitement around Labor Day night, national TV, opening up against Florida State in a primetime game, and you can honestly say a battle of two powerhouses. Ole Miss has arrived. Florida State's been there for a long, long time. But Ole Miss, the new kid on the powerhouse block, so to speak. So you've got that matchup to look at. Then your home opener 5 days later against Wofford, and just the excitement of seeing the team for the first time. Vaught-Hemingway should be sold out. And then the very next weekend, If Ole Miss manages to beat Florida State and Alabama stays perfect in its early matchups, it should be ground zero in Oxford, Mississippi for college football, because the whole world is going to want to see if Hugh Freeze and his Rebels can knock off Nick Saban for the third consecutive year. And then they only get bigger after that if Ole Miss survives those first three. Georgia and Kirby Smart coming into town, and then you've got your traditional matchups with the SEC West brethren, and all of those games will be huge. So certainly a whole lot to look forward to. All right, let's get to closing thoughts now. We'll toss it first to Michael, and he can hand it off to Dave as we wind this podcast down.
Yeah, I'm just a couple hours away from heading out to the ballpark to watch Ole Miss versus SEMO. And this should be a week where you'd think Ole Miss would go 5-0, considering Grambling's not exactly a baseball powerhouse, and coming to Oxford for a weekend set should pose a bit of problems for Grambling. And of course, SEMO started off the year getting swept, but they've actually played pretty good baseball as of late. They've won 6 of their last 8 and have been pitching pretty well, and they have a senior going on the bump tonight against Ole Miss. But it should be a 4-1 week at the worst, and of course a lot of folks are expecting a 5-0 week. So it'll be nice to see the team getting back home after going out to Myrtle Beach for a little while. I'm excited to see, you know, how MacArthur rebounds after 2 rough midweek starts. And, of course, I want to see if Coach Bianco will start solidifying Ryan Olenek into that DH spot after he started the year on the bench and then filled in when Errol Robinson had that finger infection. He filled in on that Sunday where the start is short. And he's hitting .357 this year with 5 RBIs. And, of course, that's, you know, markedly better than DJ Miller, who's hitting the DH spot, who's hitting .111 so far this year. And Holt Perdoc has been, he's had a decent year so far. He's 3rd on the team in hitting a .294 clip. So I'm really interested to see that DH spot and also how these midweek starters go against Southeast Missouri State. So it should be a fun time at the ballpark in the midweek.
All right, Dave, closing thoughts. What?
Yeah, I missed the media's first viewing of spring practice last week on Thursday, and was glad to get out to the indoor practice facility in Oxford, yesterday and be able to see the team and what you can really get out of spring practice. What you really focus in on is, you know, that the young talent, to see who can come in and add some quality depth heading into the upcoming season. And Ole Miss has got that this year. There's a lot of highly talented young faces out there that can really fight for some playing time this year. And one of the areas that I really focused my eyes on yesterday was the secondary. And there's a lot of promise out there. Hugh Freeze, one of the newcomers that he has mentioned previously multiple times is Miles Hartsfield. He has made a lot of impressions so far during spring practice, and Ole Miss has been playing him at Husky, been moving him around in various safety positions, and he's definitely a guy who can either play corner or deep in that secondary at one of the safety positions. And there's a lot of young talent there in the secondary, but they're showing a lot of promise so far. And then even with that front offensive line, Jeremy Liggins, as Hugh Freeze has mentioned before, he sees his future in the game on that offensive line. And seeing him getting those reps there at left tackle, he's even switched back and forth between right and left so far this spring, and he's showing some promise there. Alex Givens, who redshirted last year, also showing a lot of talent and promise heading into the upcoming season. So it was really, really exciting, a lot of fun to be able to watch the team yesterday.
All right, and a date has finally been set for the Chucky Mullins Courage Award Banquet. It will be held Saturday, April 9th at the Manning Center inside the 1810 Grill. It's a breakfast. It'll begin at 8 a.m. Central Time. And then after everybody eats, there will be a ceremony, and the 2016 Chucky Mullins Courage Award winner, the guy who gets to wear the coveted and revered number 38 this fall, will be unveiled. Again, that is on April the 9th. Usually that is done before the spring game. As we have told you ad nauseum, there is no spring game this year due to the construction inside Vaught-Hemingway Stadium and the installation of two new practice fields. That's why all of spring practice will be under the roof of the Manning Center. But Saturday, April 9th, and we'll get something posted up on the Rebels 247 site here very shortly with information on how you can get tickets and to attend that that annual event that is looked forward to by all Ole Miss fans. Well, that's going to do it for us today on this edition of Rebel Rise Live. We certainly appreciate you giving us a part of your day and allowing us to opine about Ole Miss athletics. So, for Dave Bevan, Michael Quirk, and 247 Sports, I'm David Johnson, and as always, hotty toddy.